ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 8, the character of Bharat Maharaj. And we're reading verse 13, which we won't recite because it's not in verse form, it's in prose. Patishu sa mukda bhavena tatra tatra vishakta mati pranaya bhara ridaya Karpayanat skandeno vahati evam utsanga urasi chadayo palakayan mudam param avapa. So we can repeat the words together. Patishu on the forest paths. Cha also. Mugda bhavena. By the childish behavior of the deer. Tatra, tatra. Here and there. Vishakta mati. Whose mind was too much attracted. Pranaya. With love. Bhara. Loaded. Ridaya. Whose heart. Karpanyat. Because of affection and love. Skandena, by the shoulder. Utvahati, carries. Evam, in this way. Utsange, sometimes on the lap. Urasi, on the chest, while sleeping. Cha, also. Adaya, keeping. Upalayan, fondling. Mudam, pleasure. Paramam, very great. Avapa, he felt. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat, due to its childish behavior. Maharaj Bharat would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap or when sleeping on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. Purport. Maharaj Bharat left his home, wife, children, kingdom, and everything else to advance his spiritual life in the forest. But again he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? One who is serious in advancing his spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. Sometimes, in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this, there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyana Gyana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in this pastime there are many many lessons that we can learn. So we can see that not only Krishna performs many pastimes which serve as lessons to us, but his devotees also perform pastimes which are meant for our learning, that we learn many things from them. And I wrote down a few things that I thought are important that we can learn from this pastime. So first of all, I thought, you know, one lesson that we can learn is that we should not renounce prematurely. That is something that we are learning also, sometimes the hard way in our society, that that many times, like Srila Prabhupada says here, what then was the use of his renouncing his family? So Of course, sannyas is one form of renunciation, but there are many other forms of renunciation that, if we do it prematurely, artificially, mechanically, forcefully, and then, you know, we go back to the attachments we had previously, or we drop that level of renunciation, then, as Srila Prabhupada says, what is the use? So it's much better to go gradually about in our detachment from material things and our attachment to Krishna. So it's a gradual process, both our attachment to Krishna, something that we develop through the years by practice and dedication and determination, and the detachment from material things, it comes also gradually. So this is something which we could learn from this pastime, that, you know, we could do it in a gradual way instead of so-called renouncing everything and then becoming attached again to the same things or other material things. And that the attachment to Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada mentions at the end, is of course very important. And I was also thinking the attachment to his devotees and to devotional service, in our case, are as important, because we come from such a distant background and platform in our relationship to Krishna that unless we become attached to the devotees first and to devotional service, it becomes very difficult to actually really get attached to Krishna. So in our beginning stages in Krishna consciousness, our main attachment is to the devotees, association of devotees, those who have some attachment for Krishna higher than us, and to devotional service, which will keep us in the mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. That's why Srila Prabhupada created such a society with so many different services, so that, you know, we can all connect to that and gradually make progress. You know, for some devotees, you know, it might take very, very long time to develop their attachment to Krishna, but as long as they perform their devotional service and remain in the association of devotees, you know, we should have that faith that it will come. Then, of course, another point which I felt was very important is to understand how powerful Maya is, how powerful illusion is. And we all know from reading pastimes of Srila Prabhupada with his disciples that he many times mentioned that one of the problems with his American and European disciples, devotees, was that they were not afraid of Maya. They felt that by having Krishna, they didn't have to fear Maya. And though it's true that by, you know, being attached to Krishna, and we know that Krishna is more powerful than material illusion and Maya, still from our perspective, Maya is super duper powerful, and we should never underestimate her. And that's why it's so important that whenever we engage in especially in preaching activities, like Srila Prabhupada mentions, that we are very careful to be very strong in our spiritual practices, in our sadhana, in our, you know, devotional practices, so that we can, you know, be able to not be victimized by these material activities. When we're in contact, when we're preaching, we're in contact with so many different aspects of material energy. And it's very important to keep a strong sadhana and have a place where one can recharge one's batteries and take prasadam, see the deities, associate with devotees, and, you know, absorb all this spiritual energy which is there in the temples, especially in major temples like Radhadesh. Then this energy is kind of overflowing. You know, everybody, when they visit Radhadesh, they say, oh, it's so, you know, such a nice energy, such a peaceful place, and so, you know, there's many subtle elements of this energy, all pervasive in Radhadesh, and also very practical engagements and activities which are 100% devotional service. So illusion is definitely like something that we have to be careful, and we have to, that's why we constantly have to pray and take shelter of the devotees, the deities, Krishna, the chanting, and so many different forms in which Krishna manifests. We have to be always in connection with with Krishna in this way. So I was just mentioning that there's an element of risk when we do preaching activities. So we should always have a calculated risk. Be careful that we don't overextend ourselves, that we don't do too much and risk too much that that we become victimized by the illusion, material energy. And so this is a very important aspect that we have to be careful with. And then another very important lesson we learned from the pastime of Bharat Maharaj is that that whatever spiritual advancement we make, it's never lost, no matter what happens, if we have problems, this advancement remains. So whenever we reconnect with Krishna, whether in this lifetime or in the next lifetime, we will be allowed to continue our devotional service, our spiritual progress, and we start from where we left off. So our consciousness, whatever service and whatever consciousness we've attained, is an eternal benefit, is something that is there permanently, and it can be carried, of course, from one life to the other. So that we learn very clearly from the case of Bharat Maharaj. And especially, the main so we can see also that at the time of death, that the external activities of rituals and all kinds of religious activities that one might perform, even the external aspects of Krishna consciousness, won't be enough to connect us with Krishna at the moment of death and allow us to go back and have his association eternally. The main element that will be tested at the moment of death is our consciousness. To what level, how we develop love for Krishna, and how pure our consciousness is. And we can see in the example of Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj, that he was performing all kinds of rituals and all kinds of activities, religious principles and activities, but his consciousness was completely somewhere else. He was not at all working on the internal connection with Krishna, but was even his rituals were being disturbed because his mind was absorbed completely on the welfare and the activities of the deer. So we can see how important consciousness is. That the externals are one thing, but what we're actually desiring, thinking, where our feelings are in relationship to Krishna, that's very important. And doesn't mean that we shouldn't perform the activities, external activities, but they're meant to really focus our consciousness on Krishna's lotus feet and detach ourselves from other sources, material sources. And then, of course, the final point I just wanted to raise is that there's a big difference between a fall down or a lack of Krishna consciousness of an ordinary living entity, conditioned soul, and that of an exalted devotee. And we can see in the pastime of Bharat Maharaj that he was a very exalted devotee, and though he did have a fall down and problems in his path to back to Godhead, he was definitely like an example teaching us in which ways we shouldn't, what things we shouldn't do. Most of the times the teaching is what we should do, how we should behave, how we should think, how we should act. But in this case, it's an example of how we shouldn't behave and what we shouldn't do. So his fall down is completely different from our fall down. We're practically on the platform of always fallen, and we're trying to elevate our consciousness. Well, he was very elevated, and he had an accidental fall down because of attachment to the deer. So we can see that in one pastime we can learn probably these lessons and many others. And The devotees are always an example, whatever happens in their life, sometimes positive example in this case, things that we should not do, things that we should avoid and be very careful. So maybe there's some comments and questions about the verse. I guess our chanting every day is like a preparation for death. If we really meditate that we could die at any moment, like we have the example of Yamuna. She was chanting on her. She was holding her beads. She was chanting, and of course she probably knew that death was approaching or close. But death is approaching and close to all of us, so we should kind of meditate and chant in that. In that state of mind that actually, okay, we might have many things to do, we might be young, we might have a lot of plans for Krishna, for service and things like that, but the reality is that death can come at any moment. So if when we chant, we kind of keep that in the back of our mind that we really need to connect now, not in 10 years or 20 years, then we will be kind of ready for when the moment comes. If we postpone that intensity of our chanting and prayer for some other day and later on, and we take things lightly, then we might not be ready at that moment. We might not be able to fully focus and fully pray to Krishna, depend on Krishna and be peaceful. So I guess our chanting is the best way to see where we're at in regards to our deeper connection. From the external point of view, this is what Srila Prabhupada says in the purport. What was the use of his renouncing so many things if he became so attached to a deer? So that's what is mentioned in the purport, and the example that we see internally we cannot say, because it's obviously he's a very exalted devotee and he was performing an activity which is there in the scripture, so is obviously not ordinary. It's not an ordinary fall down. And from later on, as we continue reading, we will hear how extreme attached he became to the deer, and then of course in his next life, what an exalted personality was, and I continued teaching in a different way. So externally, yes, we could say that it was premature, but internally we cannot say that, because obviously he was an exalted devotee. But in our case, because we're not that exalted devotees, then we should look more at the externals and analyze if actually something that we're renouncing is are we doing it forever, is it solid, is it substantial, or is it something which is whimsical and artificial? It'll we'll again become attached to it, and then we should obviously try to renounce and detach ourselves, but steadily and surely. And I think that's the path for most of us. I mean, there might be exceptions of some devotees who renounce everything at a very young age, and are good examples of full renunciation, and they don't have any problems with attachments for the rest of their lives. But they seem to be like the exception. In most of our cases, it's a gradual process. We have to go through different phases in life, different responsibilities, different services, and it's like a gradual process. 32. She was 30. And she probably wasn't the one who asked to take sannyas. My simple answer to that would be that if we do it, you know, as a duty and also to encourage the other person and you know, without a desire to, you know, gratify ourselves or something that we want, you know, that it's more for the other person's well-being and benefit and like that. And I guess, you know, there's a fine line between, that's why, you know, there's always this very careful of, you know, they use the word here, Srila Prabhupada, and actually in the Sanskrit as well, in the Sanskrit, fondling. So fondling can be something very, it could be like innocent, or it could be something very, you know, considered very bad. So it's a question of the intentions, the consciousness, and that one has when one, you know, shows affection to somebody. And of course, you know, some persons, you know, some cultures might be more, you know, requirement of physical contact than others. But I think it's a question of, you know, what is our consciousness when we're doing it, if it's, you know, without like seeking oneself sense gratification, pleasure, and I need it, I want it, it's, you know, it's nice for me, so much like that. But that we do it, you know, because we actually care for the other person and we want to express some affection to that person. Maybe you want to add something more about it? Huh? Yeah. I guess we have to be, in, you know, really depend on Krishna being, and use our intelligence to see to what degree we're doing it because the other living entity might need it, or, you know, or you know, is proper to offer that. That living entity physical affection, and to what level we're doing it because we feel pleasure, or we want it, or we need it, and I guess, you know, we have to analyze what our motivation is. Spanish. I think more than the Spanish, but
they would have to get the effect, so they would say, they get
8. So it's good that you're in a big community then. So you can prove. Indian cows special. But even beyond if whether it's service and authorized and you're giving instructions to take care of animals, whatever, there's, you know, if you have pet animals or even with other human beings, family members and children and friends and devotees, whatever, you know, there's a question of, you know, what's in the heart, what's the motivation. Sometimes it could be that we just want, you know, hugs because you know it's a kind of sense gratification, you know, we kind of become like dependent on it, and you know, there's a balance that we need to find between, you know, getting too overly affection, undue affection, and to not become, you know, of course, hard-hearted, and you can't, you know, touch anybody or hug anybody or things like that. So it's a question of balance and motivation, I would say. I mean, children, obviously, they need much more physical attention than grown-ups. And, you know, you can see in India when you go to the Sandipani Mani school, how children, they really love to, you know, they want to be petted and touched and you know, play and, you know, hugs and things like that. Obviously, an adult won't be the same. Yeah. Last question. He what? He got? Mm-hmm. I mean, we discussed a few of the lessons that we can learn from this pastime, but there's probably many more, and I'm sure you can get more and more, you know, intricate and detailed of, you know, what things devotees should avoid and what things are. I mean, we're just covering like maybe the very basic lessons that we can learn, or things that we can draw from this pastime, but I'm sure you can go much deeper and analyze much more. But that would require maybe higher understanding, higher levels of consciousness, and you know, spend much more time on each part of this pastime. And, I mean, it's going to continue, so hopefully other devotees will reveal other lessons and things to avoid from the example of Bharat Maharaj, and things, you know, that we can learn. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.